Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 17th, 2014. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I'm really glad you put this for our lead item to talk about today.
Well, it has to be, right? It's the big story of the week.
It is a big story, and I think it was breaking right around when we were posting last week's show, too. So,
of course, because every time we record a show a day early, like we are today, something big happens that day.
Yep.
It makes us look old. Oh, older than we always already are.
And, you know, it's funny because now, and then after that, we got everybody know that we're going to be doing a show a week in advance because you're going on a cruise, and you know someone important is going to die or some website's going to get shut down while you're gone.
I
know
online poker's going to come back.
Yeah, and I know we bring this up every time we do a show in advance, but I don't care. I don't care if it gets old. We're, you know, we're older, so that's what happens. But Phil Ivey, man, it makes me feel kind of dirty, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm not so sure. So I'm glad you brought this one up.
Yeah, so here's the deal. I know people have been following this Phil Ivey case, but this week he says he was obviously just using the accommodations casinos were willing to give him to his advantage when he won millions playing Baccarat, but a British judge ruled that Ivey cheated. He actually said the word cheated, and is not entitled to his gains from that London casino. And then a similar case involving two players who figured out a flaw in a video poker machine in 2009. Has resurfaced in the news as well now. And so I think both of these stories kind of bring up this question, and I know we talked about the Ivey thing when it first broke, but is taking advantage of casino flaws cheating, or is it simply gaining an edge?
You know, I think first you have to define flaw.
Okay.
Really? I mean, because for me...
So, I mean, do you see a difference between these two? I mean, I didn't put the link on the video, so you probably don't know that, but... for folks that don't know, let's kind of just talk about it, then we can get into the question. Ivey had discovered an imperfection in the cards being used, right?
Right.
You can actually, by the color of the card on the back, you can get an idea, and then he made it even easier by having a Mandarin-speaking dealer and a Mandarin-speaking friend there. He said, you know, obviously the casino agreed to all these requests, and he made them for a reason because it gave him an edge, and he used that edge to win, and now they're crying foul. In the video poker these two players realized that there was a flaw in a Game King machine software that allowed them to retroactively change the size of their bets when they hit a jackpot. So if you're playing, you know, at the nickel level, you hit a jackpot, they were able to change the bet to a dollar and make their jackpot 20 times bigger.
Wow.
So those are the two edges that were exploited in these two cases. Now, go.
Okay, so for me, I think in one of those cases, it's really a question of ethics.
One of the cases you're saying.
Well, I mean, first I'm trying to break it down here in my mind. So, I mean, like the video poker thing, that's an ethical thing, and because if the machine allows you to do something, if you're not tampering with the machine, like not going inside it and stuff, then I'm wondering if that's more ethical than legal.
Alright.
But I'm not sure. That's why I just like to flesh it out here.
Gotcha.
In Ivy's case, hey. I just don't. I mean, unless they're literally doing something that wasn't approved by the casino, how can you say he's cheating? Because he noticed that the cards were marked, or because he noticed that they were different when they were face cards, or I mean, that's. I just don't know. I mean, I feel kind of dirty thinking about it because he knows that he's got one on them, and maybe, you know, I mean, you go back to Mike McDermott and Teddy KGB. and you know somebody's tell, you don't tell them. You take all their money. Well, the casino had a tell. They should have covered their process better. They shouldn't have proved things if they were uncomfortable with them, or they shouldn't have printed cards or used cards that were able to expose what kind of card it was. Or so I'm not really sure. To me, I guess it's still an ethical gray area, because he could have said something to them and said, hey, but no, that's what they allowed him to do. You know, I'm really not sure how I feel about it. I think that Ivy should not have lost all of his millions, because they approved everything that he was doing. And then realized later the mistake and said, oh, wait, he figured the mistake out too. Let's get our money back.
Right.
And that's not right. I mean, okay, so now you fix the mistake or you throw him out or something. But just like card counting, you know, that's why I want to define flaw. Mm-hmm. Because there's a flaw in the way they've set up blackjack that people can beat them if they're good at it. And so what they do is end up throwing people out. But they don't change the blackjack game. They just throw you out because you're good at counting cards, which is not illegal, right?
That's a good example, because I do see a difference between card counting and edge sorting, which is what Ivy did, and obviously right. what these guys did with the video poker. You know, card counting, it's not really a flaw. It's just using the information that you have to make a better bet. Now, obviously, the casinos don't want you to do that and throw you out or just try to discourage you by putting 26 decks in there and all that kind of stuff. But you're not, it's not a flaw. You're just using your human intelligence to make the best decision possible. The difference I see between that and Ivy is there was a flaw in this card, right?
Yeah.
Now, whether the casino was at fault for letting them, giving them all the stuff, that's the next step that we need to talk about. But I don't equate these things as being equal, card counting and edge sorting and retroactively changing your video poker bet. I think those are distinct differences. But that being said, I mean, I get this. This is what people are saying right now. You know, hey, these casinos are set up to win, right?
Right.
And these guys found a way to beat them at their own game, and now they're upset and crying foul. And there's a lot of people out there that are happy or that think these guys are heroes. You turn the tides on these casinos that prey on you. And I don't go that far either. I mean, I think for you to agree with that is to say that casinos are doing something duplicitous with you out there.
Right.
Right? Where they're actively cheating players that come in, and they're not doing that. They're running a game that they have an edge at. Everybody knows that or should know that, and you play anyhow because of the entertainment value or whatever it is that you've decided you're going to do. They're not taking advantage of you.
Right. They're putting their cards on the table and saying, we know we have an edge here, but you're playing to try to win some money off
exactly.
us.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say.
And you're supposed to be entertained by it, and it's not supposed to be your income or your rent or any of that. You're supposed to come here and have fun with us and have a chance at a buck, but we're providing a system and an entertainment and employees to do it for you, and that's the cost of doing business, is that we have an edge.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, and no, and I agree. I don't ever think of casinos as being evil, ever. I mean,
I'm sure there's things where they could do that they are, so I'm not saying all casinos are on the open.
Right, right.
You know, in general.
But generally, they're all regulated and
exactly,
everything. So,
right.
Okay, go ahead. You finish your thought.
So, I mean, I guess where I come down on this is that I don't think it's right for Phil Ivey to have done what he did. I don't think it's right what these video poker guys did. I don't think that I personally would have taken advantage of those flaws had I known about them. It's just, you know, my personality and how I was raised. But that being said, I don't know how these people could be lose their court cases.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, in the video poker thing, it was like theft. I mean, you're not thieving at that point. You're exposing a flaw and you did it, and casino needs to fix the flaw and kick you out. And same thing with the Ivy thing. I mean, they gave him all this stuff. They're claiming that he wanted all this stuff for superstitions, which is what everybody usually wants.
Right.
But he didn't sit down and say, hey, I'm superstitious, as far as I could tell. I mean, maybe I missed this in order. I don't think he sat down and said, I'm superstitious, I want this, this, and this. I think he sat down and said, I went this, this, and this, and they gave it to him, and in their mind, they assumed it was for superstition and not for some kind of edge, and they made it happen. So, again, I think, you know, they lose, they kick him out, they make the changes, and they go on with life, and that's the way it is. So, I think it's, I think it goes back to the very beginning what you said, ethics versus legality. I don't think what either one of these people did was illegal. But I do think all three of them were unethical.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I was going to say. Was that ethics? I think it's kind of shoddy, but legally, I mean, they did nothing wrong legally. And so how does Phil Ivey lose that case? I don't get it. But you know, that's the thing. You got somebody sitting there to judge, and he can do what he wants to do. That's the thing. So, but yeah, I mean, like I said, I felt at the beginning of the segment, I said I felt a little dirty, but at the same time, I don't know if what they did was illegal. It's not illegal, so. And this is the other thing, too, I wanted to say about defining what flaw was.
Right.
Because there are games in the casino that offer you a better edge than other ones.
Sure.
And that's the casino offering it. So if the casino says, hey, here's a game that you can beat if you're smart enough, that's their flaw, not the game's, or it's the game's flaw in the sense that it gives the patron too much of an edge. Just like if you play single deck blackjack, and you know, Andy Block would destroy it. You know what I mean? So, and why would he do that? Because there is a system that beats that deck. There is a system that beats that system itself. So, you know, that's their flaw. It's their flaw for using it, not exactly the game's. You know, it's the game's flaw, and they used it. In a sense that if you want to make money using that game, that's your problem. You put that game out there and we can beat it. Just because we can beat your system doesn't mean that we should lose the money that we won. That's your problem for putting it out there and putting those accommodations out there. So I really can't believe he lost this. You know, I mean, it'd be one thing if he was cheating, like literally cheating. You know, like had a little shiner on his finger he could see under cards, yeah, or something like that. But all he did was ask for things, they gave them to him, and he won with it. And it's just not right. And so I wonder, do you think that this casino now is going to get a bunch of bad publicity for suing one of its players to get its money back for something that they screwed up in the first place?
Well, I don't know about bad publicity, because again, I think these cases that we're talking about are very controversial. I'm sure half our listeners are agreeing with us, the other half are upset with us, you know, because I think it really is down that line.
Yeah.
I don't think this is heavy 70-30 one side of the ledger here at all. This is at worst 60-40 what side you're on this. Obviously, if I'm a big whale, right, I'm probably not going to go to a casino that has shown that it's got sour grapes and sues me if I win.
Right.
Or tries to find out how I won and sues me. That's probably not a casino I would rather play at. And again, I think it also kind of shows kind of the character of a casino that is willing to give you all this stuff, because in the back room they're laughing, knowing that they have an edge over you, and, oh, sure, you want a Mandarin deal? Sure, no problem. We're going to win. And then wake up the next morning, whoa, what happened? Well, that's not right. We should have won. We're just going to sue them. I think that's wrong, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there'll probably be a little bit of fallout. I don't know how big of a deal it really will probably end up being. But I do think it's interesting that the judge used the word cheated in his response, and we're talking about whether he cheated or not, because I could actually see that. I mean, I don't agree with it, but I could see how, you know, you put a rational person in front of me and I tell the story, and half of them will say, absolutely, that's cheating. And you're a half, well, no, he just had an edge.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's you're right. There's levels of cheating, and certainly what you're talking about, you know, is unquestionably cheating, I think, where this is probably questionably cheating.
Yeah. Yep, and he just happened to get a judge that fell on that side of the fence.
Yeah, huh. Absolutely.
Oh, well.
Interesting. All right. Well, stuff that's a little less controversial. Well, maybe it is. I don't know. You know, we laughed pretty heartily a couple months ago when what was your stepson, right, that found the episode of Annie Up buried on Hoarders, buried alive.
Yeah.
Literally buried.
Yeah.
So we watched that right now. So now it's Reality Aftermath 2 that we're going to be on. Annie Up is making the TV Circles, the episode of this E! True Hollywood Story Reality Aftermath 2 is expected to air on November 14th, and the show follows the post-reality TV world of the very lovely Trishelle Canatello, who went from MTV's Real World to becoming a poker player. And we wrote a story about her when she signed with Sure Bet Poker, who sponsored one of our first cruises. And I got this thing in the mail, or, I mean, actually a call from the producer of E! True Hollywood Story, and I had to sign a release for.
Man, you know you made it when you have to sign documents to let people use your stuff.
let somebody rip something off your website.
That's right. That's hilarious.
So I'm sure it's going to be like a very quick one of those little, you know, fade out kind of Ken Burns kind of slide things, you know. Yeah. You know, I don't think she's going to sit there and talk about how awesome it was for Annie to write a story about her.
But you know what, though? I've watched those documentaries before, and they constantly reuse the same slides over and over during the episode. So maybe they'll keep showing us, like, maybe we'll get, like, a bunch of advertising and branding out of this, you know?
I get four or five impressions out of this thing.
That'd be great. Hey, our internet numbers went up by 3 viewers last month because of that. But that's cool. Now we're on TV twice for our magazine and website and stuff. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, so set your calendars. Again, they said they weren't sure, but they said it was scheduled to air on November 14th. And again, it's E! True Hollywood Story Reality Aftermath 2.
Wouldn't it be just a pisser if you put the show on and then we're not even on it? Like we're on the cutting room floor somewhere.
Yeah, they had to get a bunch of maybe they get a bunch of different headlines from the different sites, and then they're just gonna pick which one is prettiest, and ours wasn't prettiest.
Yeah, and ours didn't make the cut. Oh man, that would suck.
But you know, the other thing I thought was funny was that, you know, our this is a story that we ran years ago, right?
Yeah.
But it's still on our website, and every time you click on anything on our website, it generates a new current banner ad from one of our advertisers, right? So the screen grab they sent me had a banner from Jackson Rancheria Casino out in California, one of our newer advertisers who clearly wasn't advertising back when we were story.
Right.
So, and I don't know whether they're going to use that actual slide or they're just going to go back in and
blur out other
later
stuff
again or blur it out. Yeah. But I think that's kind of cool, right? I'm looking forward to being able to call my advertisers and say, look, we got you on E! True Hollywood.
We got you on E! True Hollywood Story. How about re-up them for 5 more years?
I don't watch a lot of this stuff. I mean, I actually am a big fan of E! True Hollywood Story for the real celebrities. I don't know about this B-list stuff that they're doing now. But I fell in love with Trishelle when she was on The Real World. I know you were a big Real World fan.
Never watched one episode.
She was on the first Vegas one. Oh. And probably the second last season that my wife and I watched before we realized we're too old to be watching stuff on MTV. But I liked her a lot, and then she became a poker player, and I think she's still playing poker now, too.
Cool.
I don't really know how good she is, but she I think she finished third in one of those WPT Invitationals, I think. So, got at least one big cash, bigger cash than I have.
We're all aware of her. I mean, we had her in the magazine, and whatever, so that's cool. But I'll be looking forward to seeing that. All right, we got some Annie Up updates. I love that, Annie Up updates. I gotta say up, up twice in a row like that. Sounds like I'm hiccuping. The schedule and details for the upcoming Annie Up Poker Tour is November 19th to the 23rd at Pensacola Greyhound Track in the Florida Panhandle, and November 25th to the 30th, the Annie Up NorCal Classic at Thunder Valley Casino Resort near Sacramento, California, have been announced. Go to annieupmagazine.com/Pensacola for information on the Pensacola event, which is a $250 buy-in multi-day tournament, the winner of which will appear on the January cover of our magazine. Maybe you'll have a screen grabber you when you're on the E! True Hollywood Story. And then go to annieupmagazine.com/Thunder Valley for more information on the Thunder Valley event, which features 7 events in the series, capped by a $500 main event with a $250,000 prize pool.
Woo. Yeah, a lot of $250,000 prize pools for our events, you know. And remember, our Derby Lane one starts November 1st to 16th, and that's a $150 buy-in with $250,000 guarantee. Yep. So
the accumulator.
A lot of Annie Up money to be won out there, so hope to see you folks out at any one of these events.
All right, listener spotlight. Each week we spotlight someone who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This comes from Covey. I'm going to say Covey because we...
Yeah, he's been on the show like 100 times. So we still don't know.
Yeah, we still, but he says, I listen...
Cava.
Cava. Covey. I'm going to say Covey. So he says, I listened to the Pod Odds podcast and enjoyed it. Really?
No one's ever said that.
You're the only one. he said, I had a thought afterward. He said, on the flop and hold'em, if you have the nut flush draw, you have two chances to hit your hand and therefore double your 18% chance of winning the hand to 36%, which also means that you can call if your opponent makes a pot-sized bet that gives you 2-1 or 33%. The odds change on the turn if you miss, and your percentage chance is now 18%. If the opponent makes a pot-sized bet on the turn, you should fold. What never occurred to me is that by folding here, you are not committing to your original decision and expectation of two chances to make your hand against a pot-sized bet. In other words, your decision on the flop needs to play out to two chances to make your hand unless your opponent overbets the pot on the turn. If you fold the turn here, shouldn't you also have folded on the flop if you are getting asked to call more than 80% of the pot and are not willing to see, pay to see the river? Any help? Am I just talking myself into calling more? Okay, I know I just read all that and people are tired of hearing my voice, but I have to speak here.
Yes, because it's good, because I don't do the math.
So. Okay, so what bothers me and always has bothered me, and I even edited a poker book that brought up the rule of 2 and 4 and 4, whatever.
Sure.
Is that if somebody makes a pot-sized bet and you think you have a 36% chance to make your hand by the end, you are paying 36% or 33% to see the turn and the river for that to be true. If you pay 33% and you only get to see one card and not the second card, you are not seeing both cards. So if he makes another pot-sized bet at the end, you have now paid what would essentially be, if you say, or well, not pot-sized, let's say he just makes any size bet. If he doesn't make any bet at all then, and you got to see that river, then your percentage that you paid was worth it.
Right.
But when he makes another bet, you have to add that to the original one, and that's how much now you've paid to get to that point. Now, I know at the end, okay, the money's in there, nothing you can do about it. Now you have to reset all the calculations for the river. But by paying that 36% or that 33% on the flop, unless it's an all-in and you're going to see both cards automatically, you are making a mistake. I'm sorry to tell you, but I don't care what this rule says. You are making a mistake unless you get to see both cards.
So that's what he's saying, right?
Right. That's essentially like what he's
saying.
He's
realizing now that it's a mistake, and he wants to be sure that it's a mistake.
Yeah. To me, it has to be a mistake. At that point, if you knew you were going to see both cards for that price, then it's fine. But the second that the turn comes and you have to pay again to see the river, you are overpaying. And if he makes a pot-sized bet on the end, then there's no way you don't want to pay 33%. For an 18% chance to win. So you're making a mistake there too. But yeah, I totally agree that if that's what he's saying, that we should have folded on the flop for a pot-sized bet, yeah, we probably should have, unless you believe the implied odds will get you more money than that. But it's hard to figure that out.
Yeah, that's what makes the calculation so hard and why I'm so happy I suck at math and I don't have to worry about it. is that... What? You got two extra equations you got to figure out, right? One is the implied odds that we always talk about, right? That if you hit your hand, will you get paid off, and you can use that money to affect your call, right?
Right.
And then the other side of it is if you don't hit your hand on that card, but you get one more card to see it, you got to figure out how much more of a bet you're going to face on that second card.
Right.
And that's all the stuff that goes into that flop decision, which I think, quite honestly, I think is very difficult to make. Which is, again, why it goes back to the feel, which, you know, people say it's not feel, it's really math, but I think it's more feel. I'm sitting there at that point, if I'm in that situation, I'm thinking what I'm comfortable putting in the pot the rest of the hand, and I'm trying to figure out how likely my opponent is based on my previous experience with he or she to fire again and how much he's going to fire if I miss on that turn and have to stick around. And generally, I end up deciding, you're right, I'm not going to stick around for two shots at this. I need some other option of winning this, which is to raise them or bluff or maybe hitting one of my cards gives me top pair, whatever it is. Because it's kvar, see, all kinds of different ways. Said, if you make a decision based on those two and you don't follow through, then you've made a mistake. Though, following through might be making two mistakes, too. So, that's the other thing you got to consider, right?
Yeah, and again, it gets back to Like, if you want to try to use implied odds, man, you really got to know your player. If that person bet the pot because they wanted to make sure you were making a mistake because they were afraid of that flush getting there, then the flush gets there, and they were going to recognize the flush got there. That's why they bet the pot in the first place. And then you bet they're going to fold because they think that their top pair is not good now because the flush got there, and that was the reason they bet that much in the first place.
Exactly.
So how can you quantify that? And then that's how they say it's math, because then you got to really put percentages on that stuff and whether or not he's smart enough to recognize the flush draw or whether or not that's why he was betting that amount. And it's so much that that's why you have to just go back to, all right, you know what, I'm willing to take a chance here and whatever or not. And so to me, making that call on that bet of a pot size bet is truly a mistake percentage-wise, unless you're positive, unless you're definitely going to see the river because it's an all-in kind of thing. Otherwise, to me, it's just gamblers trying to rationalize themselves and making a mistake.
And that's a good point. If this guy's bet is all-in and you know you get the two shots at it, then the math is easy, right?
Yeah, it's easy.
No, you don't have implied odds or knowing what you're facing on the
exactly.
next thing. You can actually make that come. So that's why I always encourage my opponent when they bet, go ahead and shove all in so I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, put all that stuff in there now and make my math
easier. I'm not really good at the math, sir, so if you don't mind just putting it all in, that way I can, because I can figure out that calculation. But the rest of the stuff I don't know.
All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com and we'll have Ante Up Poker Tour Tournament Director and, of course, Golden Nugget Poker Room Manager as well, Sam Minatello, tell you how you would have ruled. This comes from Matt Bodorf. That sound right?
Yes.
All right. In a daily tournament at a major card room, seat one limps and it folds to the big blind. The big blind, believing everyone folded, flips over ace-ace and moves them forward about 3 inches from the muck. After he realizes seat one limped, he shoves. Seat one didn't notice the exposed hand, and the dealer didn't say anything, and he calls and loses the hand. Should we as players done anything to prevent the call? Should the dealer have announced the exposed hand?
All right, Sam says, so what should have happened here is the dealer should have immediately called for the floor when the big blind exposed his hand and then grabbed it back. Once again, when something unusual happens at a poker table, the action needs to stop and the floor should be notified. As a player, I would not get involved with pointing out someone's exposed hand, but I would tell the dealer that the floor is needed. I would also like to add that it's a player's responsibility to pay attention to action on the table. Poker is a visual game, and both these players seem to not be paying attention to what was happening in this hand. Maybe the outcome of the hand would have been different if, A, they were paying better attention, and B, if the floor was called to the table as needed in this situation.
Right. I don't see any way that you say, hey, by the way, before you called it all in, he had ace-ace and you missed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't imagine him doing that. It's not a folded card or an exposed card that everyone is supposed to have information on. It's this guy showed his cards and chose not to show them, especially in a cash game. In a cash game, most of the time, it's a tournament, but in a cash game, you're allowed to, you know, to show your cards anyway. But in this, you know, it was a mistake he made, and he covered it up fast enough. The guy didn't see it. Tough, you know. It's not a hand that's mucked that everyone gets that benefit of, or a misdeal card that flashed. This is the guy showed his hand by accident, and then he covered up his mistake. So that guy does not deserve to know that he had ace-ace, but maybe he should know that the cards were exposed and then turned back over. You know, I don't know if that helps him in his decision.
Yeah, I guess I'm curious what the floor would do with this case. I'm not arguing with Sam. I think he's right. If something out of the ordinary happens, you call the floor, and then what the floor decided was going to happen here.
Right.
But, you know, this seems fairly benign to me that this guy exposed his hand. I mean, I don't know. Were they heads up? Do you even say that?
I think he said everyone folded to him, and so he thought,
So if you're heads up at this point, what does it really matter at this point? You know, if the guy exposed his hand, didn't realize it, and covered it back up before the other guy saw.
Yeah.
It goes back to what Sam says, a game of information. I think the whole expose the hands and leaving exposed and stuff, that's more when there's more people involved, so you're not, you know, that, you know, what you mentioned, that, you know, that somebody has an advantage that somebody else doesn't. Here, there's no advantage to be gained by any other players.
Right.
I mean, obviously, this guy, had he saw the aces, and he may not have called. But that's more on him, I think, than anybody else. So.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Huh. All right. Hey, we got to start off with a new O'Malley's Move today. This is episode 72. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week begins a series of three hands in which we're seated at a rare $1, $2 PLO 8 casino cash game. Rare for this casino, anyway. We've also just barely sat down, and for the first hand at the table, we're in the big blind with 200 in chips. We post. It's eight-handed. The under-the-gun limps, plus one folds, MPs 1 and 2 limp, cutoff limps, button folds, small blind completes, and we have the 8 of hearts, 8 of clubs, 5 of hearts, 5 of diamonds, and no information on any opponents at this table, except that 5 of the 8 players limped. We check with our trash, and with 6 players going to the flop and $12 in there, it comes down the king of hearts, 8 of diamonds, 4 of hearts. An interesting flop, we've made the second set and have a weak flush draw. The small blind checks, and at this point, I'm thinking we're going to make a bet. It's unlikely anyone has kings, so at this point, we're probably good on the high. Also, if there are any ace threes out there, we might be able to push them off by possibly representing a weak ace two. We make it $8 to go. It's folded all the way around to the cutoff, who calls. He has roughly the same amount of chips we do. The small blind folds. Oh goody, a PLO 8 hand played out of position. Isn't this Chris's favorite scenario? With about $25 in the pot, the turn is the queen of diamonds. I'm not sure where this guy is at in the hand, maybe ace of hearts, three of hearts. With no information on our opponent, we slow down and check. He fires $15 into the pot. Perhaps we make our first mistake in the hand, because we decide to pay to get some information out of this guy. With $50 in the pot, the river is the deuce of clubs, completing the low draw but virtually nothing else. We again decide to check, and our opponent fires another bullet, this one for $40. So, are we folding? Calling to get information? Is there any argument for a raise here? What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. And I think we did this not too long ago. David Bloomberg, one of our super fans. Sent in a two hands from the same player. And I think we did them. I don't know if we did them like we're going to do this week. But we talked about both and thought that was kind of cool because you're taking lessons from the one hand. And then the same opponent. A different situation and try and apply what you learned about that opponent on the second hand, right?
Right.
Which is what you kind of do at the poker table, right?
Right.
So here's what we're going to do. Now, we're recording two shows today because I'm going on the cruise next week, right?
Right.
So we're going to do the first of the two hands as the hand of the week this week and the second of the two hands on next week's show, which we're actually recording here in 5 minutes. So, so you and I will be fresh with this in mind, and now we're testing our listeners to remember the information from this week's hand. When they listen to next week's game.
It's all just a ploy for us to have you to re-listen to our show and bump up our numbers.
It just sounds like we're at a Hollywood movie here. You know, one of those mind-bender kind of things that I never watched? Like, I don't know, Divergent, is that one of them or something like that?
I don't know.
Inception or something where there's all kinds of stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one really knows what's getting on, but you leave the movie theater going, that was the most amazing movie ever. What was it about? I can't tell you. No, you can tell me anything. No, I really honestly don't know what happened in there. all right, so here's the first one. He says this comes from a weekly 1-2 no limit hold'em home game where our friend David here is about 10 to 20 years below the average age of the group, and with an exclamation point, he says, I'm 46! All right, so we're playing around here with some war veterans, right?
Yeah.
And he says, many of the players here fit the image you expect of being rather tight, and sometimes I feel like one of the most aggressive players there in terms of my betting, which he says is ironic because in most games I'm considered one of the tightest players. He says, but I'm also tight enough to fold to a big bet if I don't have a huge hand. Still, these guys have been around the block more than a few times, and some of them are more than capable of making big bluffs. So don't get lured in by the fact that this is a bunch of passive rocks here, right?
Right.
These guys got a little game.
Okay.
All right, so here's this week's hands. He says, it's not been a winning night so far. I'm down about 50 from my initial $200 buy-in. Two players limp to me on the button, and I look down at two red queens.
Okay.
And he says, as background, my usual raise in this game is between $10 and $12, with $11 being the most common number I choose. Others raise to as little as $4 to $7 sometimes.
And it's a 1-2 game, you said?
1-2.
Oh, okay. Well, a usual raise, if he said it's between 10 and 12, this is an unusual circumstance because we have limpers, right?
That's correct, yes.
So I don't think the usual amount is correct here. I think we need to make it 15.
All right.
How's that sound to you?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Normally, once you, I'm going to raise to 10. I don't do that $6 crap. I think I usually start at 10.
Right.
And then add $2 for each limper. So 12, 14. 14. And I usually like to round up, which is interesting because online I like to round. I don't like to round. I like the odd numbers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
In cash games, I like to be nice and neat. So, yeah, I'm going to say 15 is what I'm going to
do. All right.
Excellent.
We both agree.
All right. David says, I raised to $11. The big blind calls me, but all the limpers fold.
Got the desired effect.
He's
anyway.
A little smarter than us. He saved $4 and got the same thing we wanted.
Yeah, that's good.
Big blind has me covered. The board comes six of spades, deuce of spades, ten of hearts, and the villain, who says is actually quite a nice guy, so I guess we really shouldn't call him a villain. But he says there's no friends in poker either. So yeah, we're back to calling him a villain. Very nice villain.
Nice villain.
And that very nice villain checks. So it's on us, and we have an overpair with two spades on board.
Okay, well, there are some random draws here, you know, like something weird, like 7-8's got a gut shot, or 8-9, and even maybe 4-5 or something. But I doubt those people would have called raises with those. Maybe the 8-9 or something, but I especially out of position, I doubt it. So the spades you want to probably protect against. So I don't know. Let's see. There's 30 or so in the pot. I don't know. Let's see. 20, 22, and then some limpers. So, you know, about 20. So I'd bet about 18 or so, maybe 20.
18? And we have, what, the edge 22, 24? Yeah, that seems pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Of course, then again, I just kind of do my normal same bet kind of thing, so I probably would have put 15 in. That's not correct. I probably would have done more of what you said. But
yeah.
In a live thing, I would just say $15 again. But in that neighborhood, so.
Okay.
All right, he says, with the two spades and possible, though unlikely, straight draws, I bet 20.
Yeah, okay. That sounds about right. I mean, it sounds a little big, but it's probably about right. It's half the pot. No, that's two-thirds of the, more than two-thirds of the pot. Yeah, that's probably a lot. I mean, 18, 16, something like that, but that's okay, whatever. I mean, you're trying to protect two, and they may know that. It might be a tell on your part, but even so, they could probably use that against you if a spade gets there, and there you show that you're afraid of spades, but that's another day. So I probably wouldn't have bet that much, but that's fine, whatever.
Sure. But the villain calls fairly quickly.
Okay.
I always like that fairly quickly. I like when they kind of give us that timing thing.
Yeah.
Because generally, right, the fairly quickly is a draw, right?
That's they generally say, yeah.
But draw generally wouldn't call this much off.
Yeah.
Unless he's planning on sticking around for both streets, right?
In knowing that he's not going to have to pay on the river.
Exactly. He's made that calculation and knows.
That's right.
All right. The turn is the five of diamonds, and the villain checks again.
Yeah, I mean, we got...
That's right. Our board is now six of spades, deuce of spades, ten of hearts, five of diamonds.
Five of diamonds. So the flush didn't get there. That weird straight got there. But again, there's no way some guy just committed $31 on tray four.
Right.
Doesn't feel like that would possibly happen in this game. But I'm going to say, let's put the hammer down here and make a nice size bet. So there's 40 from the last street plus the 20. So it's like 60-something in the pot here. I wouldn't mind making it 45 or 50 here. Maybe 45.
Yeah, 50's a nice round number.
Yeah, something like that.
But here's the thing. The guy made it clear that he's willing to come along here, right? And if he's on the spade draw, which seems likely, and he's willing to call pretty much anything to beat us, then let's make him pay for it, right?
Right.
If we're wrong on that, then that's fine. But again, I'm not seeing a whole lot here that we're behind. you know, unless it's another set, which I guess could also be fairly quickly, right? But that's about it. Other than that, I think we're pretty good here.
Yeah, the set's the only real thing we're afraid of, because the only other thing that beats us is 3-4. So, you know, and it's hard to imagine a set. And actually, you know, sometimes people like to bet into people who raise preflop when they hit a set to see if you have an overpair and they can get it all in. So that's one thing that hasn't happened yet. And then also, he might want to protect his hand with a set against the draw. So he still hasn't done that either. So I feel like we're comfortably ahead still. I feel like we're good, and I'm going to lay the rule down here. I'm going to put some money in the pot that's going to make him really think about it.
All right. He says, I figured the only way the 5 helped him is if he was playing Trey 4, which seems very unlikely. 2-pair also seems highly unlikely. I said it's possible, but I don't think I can be afraid of it, so I bet again, this time making it $40.
Mm. Okay.
Villain ponders for a bit and then calls. But yeah, so I guess this is what I'm saying here is, I mean, we don't know how this hand's going to end up, but if we end up winning this hand, I think we probably lost $20 there, right?
Right.
At least 10, if we did 50, like you were thinking. Because this guy seems like he wants to call, so let's bet the maximum we think he's going to call. Maybe he would fold for 60, who knows, but we would price, in his mind, pricing him in at 40. But I think at this point, I think we left up to $20 in value on the table there.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I was thinking 45 or 50. Because a pot size bet is pretty big. You also want to get value for your hand if this guy is drawing and you want to.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think if the guy called fairly quickly, that the odds of him wanting to call again fairly quickly are the odds of him calling an over bet are more likely than your standard situation where the guy took an hour to make that last decision, right?
Right.
At that point, then I'm going to bet a little less because I want to, you know, get the money out of him. But if this guy seems willing to give me money, I'm willing to take it.
So you want to bet more than 18% on this last streak because you're convinced he's going for a flush draw. You want to bet more than 18 so he's making a mistake, but yet he's still, you know, drooling at the amount that you put out there, so he has to call again to try to hit his flush draw, so... No, I don't mind 40, but I probably would put a little more in. And like you said, you want to get more out of this guy if it looks like he wants to get that hand made. So if that's what he's doing, if he's going for the flush draw, you know, I'm gonna try to milk him for all he has. And if he's not, if he's got something different, like eights or something, and he's just not believing us, you know, then that's fine, too, because we're ahead of him. So
yeah. All right, so here's his At this point, I'm putting him on a flush draw. It's the only thing I can think of that would cause him to check call twice. Like this. It's possible he's slow playing a set, but I don't think I've seen him play one in this way before. So I've decided if a spade hits on the river and he shoves, I will probably fold. Otherwise, I'm likely calling. The river is the 5 of hearts, pairing the board but not hitting the flush. So our final board is 6 of spades, deuce of spades, 10 of hearts, 5 of diamonds, 5 of hearts, and the villain snap shoves and has us covered.
Yeah, I'm not folding. If I were to fold here, then why was I playing this hand at all?
Right.
I mean, here's the deal. If this guy has a boat, okay, he doesn't shove. He value bets. Why would he shove? I mean, it's not one of those online things where they overbet and, you know. This, to me, is if he has a boat, he's not going to want to scare us. He wants us to call. Mm-hmm. And... by us, you know, we could have been doing what we're doing with very likely with ace king. We could have had ace 10. You know, I mean, and there's no way this guy has a 5 in his hand. You know, there's just no way. And if he did, he'd want to get value for it anyway. So it feels like he's behind and he thinks the only way he can win is if he shoves. So there's no way I'm folding here. Plus, the amount of money that's in that pot now, it's probably worth the call anyway. He only started with 150.
All right, yeah.
So how could I fold anyway? I mean, we put 40 in and 20 at 60 plus the 11 at 71. So there's 150 in the pot, and we only have 70 left. So if he shoves, we're getting like 4-1 on our money with an overpair to a board that played like he was either drawing or didn't believe us. So if he has a set or a full house, more power to him. But I don't think he would play it that way, and I can't fold. So I'm going to call.
Excellent. I am as well, and our Harrison, as I said, I had determined that I was likely calling on a non-spade if I was behind before, nothing has changed, and my read was just wrong. So I called for the remaining squiggly 80 in my stack. Villain turns over pocket fours.
Oh. When you said that, I'm like, oh, we're screwed. I'm like, wait a minute. That doesn't mean anything.
That's kind of like the chuckle.
Okay, so that's good.
Oh, your little measly pocket fours. Take a look at these wonderful women. He says he exclaims that he can't believe I called. He says that he was certain the board pairing and him shoving after check calling twice would scare me off. I tried to ask him how pairing the turn would scare me, since he would have had to call my flop bet with a five in his hand to make it meaningful, but he was still somewhat stunned. In my mind, the only real draw that worried me was the flush, and he believed he was telling a very different story, a story I just wasn't reading, because I think it's something of an interesting lesson that players need to realize their story doesn't have to just make sense to themselves, but also to the opponent.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so I guess maybe we can sort of replay that hand and think, would pocket kings play it this way? Where, okay, if you had pocket kings, would you just call a raise or out of position? Probably not. You don't want to be out of position with a hand like that. You'd probably re-raise preflop. So kings and aces really don't make sense. Tens probably don't make sense either. Jacks, we aren't folding the jacks, so that doesn't matter. So pocket tens probably raise, and if they don't, they flop that set. Along the line there somewhere, he's not going to keep check calling. He's going to want to protect his hand somewhere in there before you get to that river. And a five in your hand would never have called the raise preflop unless it was pocket fives. And if you made quads, you'd want to get paid off. So there's no hand that I can come up with, at least real quickly here. I mean, I've had to really sit down for a long time to think of something, but there's no hand in my mind that would play it that way that has us beat. Maybe ace five of spades. But why shove?
Yeah, I think his whole story came crashing down with a shove on the end.
Yep.
Because, I mean, there's nothing that he could have there that we would be scared of that would shove that river. Unless, you're right, you go back to the online thing you mentioned where you can overshove your big hands and hope that somebody does that second level, though I couldn't have anything that I could be if he shoved, and I'm going to call. That's real risky, I think. So, yeah, I think his story fell apart there.
If he had more money, or if there was more money in the pot and he could have made an interesting bet if we had more money, then it might be a case where you're like, all right, well, I can still get away from this because I have 400 in front of me and this is a $50 bet and trying to save 50 bucks or whatever. But when you only have, 60 or 70 left and there's, with that shove, 200 in the pot or whatever it was, I mean, there's just no way he can get away from it. So there needs some other factors for that shove to have worked or to have found a bet number that would make us think twice and fold. But given the circumstances, a shove is just not going to get you to fold there, I don't think.
And what's interesting is that this guy could have won this hand with the spade game because the story would have made sense then, right?
Yeah, yep. Spade came, but and sometimes you wonder if that's why
and
they're
even
calling.
Ace or king, not that you would feel comfortable if you're him making that shove with an ace or king there, because it almost seems likely that ace king helped us. But yeah, it's really hard to put us on spades the way we played this hand. So if that spade comes, that was an opportunity to do exactly what he did, probably won the pot, which is very interesting, I think.
Yeah. All right, Dave. Well, thanks for the hand. We look forward to hand number two with more information next week. And Scott will be on the high seas. So have a good cruise, buddy.
Thank you.
I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.